And I remember one time working in a manufacturing company, and they actually made handguns. And as an engineer, my job was to make them more efficient and effective and get more product through the door. And I realized, okay, police forces were using guns, but a lot of people were using guns for other purposes. And I thought, here I am wanting to help people. And instead, in a way, I felt like I was harming people, by making this gun manufacturer more efficient. So I won't say that I quit my job that day, but it began a process. I went back to school. I did a master's in counseling psychology. I was the only engineer in the psychology department. But again, it was fun to bring these disciplines together. And I didn't really even know where that master's of counseling was going to go until I had a serendipitous meeting after I finished that degree that led me into career counseling at one of the big universities here in Toronto. And that began a whole change. So it was really now, from a career lens, I would call it a values tension, wanting to help people and yet hurting people. I didn't even have the language back then to say what the problem was. And I think a lot of clients are like that. They know that there's a problem, but they just don't know quite what to deal with it.
Welcome to APCDA Podcast, a series of career-related discussion. The episode is in its sixth season in 2026 with the theme On the Mic with Thought Leaders. I'm Samantha, and with me is Dr. Michael. We are very happy, very pleased to invite our speaker for the day, Mr. Mark Franklin, to be on the mic with us. So I'm really excited to personally hear from him on how he and his team have been leveraging on tools, games to help thousands of clients from all around the world to empower them in their career and life decision. So without further ado, I'd like to invite Mark to the virtual stage. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Samantha and Mike, thanks so much for having me today.
Before we get started, I think we would love to know you better. So would you have the honor to share with us a little bit about yourself, your life, your career?
Yeah, thanks for the invitation and for the open question. I've been really working in the career space, trying to offer deep listening to a wounded world. I've been using the phrase story listening, and I want to share more about that, but we've been story listening with individual clients and helping others who want to learn how to story listen in this very unique way to learn that skill. I even feel like it's a movement because we already have a few thousand people who are learning, career practitioners who are using these story listening tools and then in turn helping their clients, their students, their employees listen, especially in this kind of crazy, polarized, chaotic, troubled world that we're in. So I think it's a real gift to give people, to listen to them carefully. And I'm so pleased to be able to do that with an awesome team at Career Cycles and some great partners and team members at One Life Tools and a great community of practice. And everybody has a story. I have a story, and I'll tell you a bit more about my story and how I got to all of this. But I'll say, like, just the different hats that I wear now. So I lead a career management practice called Career Cycles, based in Toronto, but with clients everywhere, mostly in Canada and the United States. We've worked with over 5,000 clients with a wonderful and caring team of story listeners. Together with Rich Feller, I co-founded One Life Tools. And so this provides tools for story listening to career practitioners and others who want to learn and use these. I host a podcast, right? So I'm excited to have the tables turned today, you guys, and be a guest, because normally I'm the host of the podcast called Career Buzz. I teach many of these topics in different places, including at the University of Toronto, where I've been teaching for a number of years. And recently I've been facilitating something I'm excited to talk about. It's called the AI Stewardship Practice Program for career practitioners. And personally, I'm a father. I went for a good walk this morning with my daughter. I'm a partner. I'm a son. I'm a brother. I'm a cousin. I'm a mentor. I'm a cyclist. And I'm an adventurer.
Wow, that's a mouthful. Thank you for your introduction. Really interested to hear more about your story listener work that you'll be doing. But before we get there, I'm like yourself. I had a training in engineering, and you are a professional engineer. So what led you to your current interest in career development?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Samantha. I noticed that you were an engineer also, and I was going to ask you, but hey, it's your podcast, so I'll respond. But I was curious, and it's funny, I do from time to time meet people in the career space with an engineering background. And I think now the intersection of those skill sets, the systems thinking and the problem-solving disciplines of engineering, and this deep listening and this kind of career superpower that we have in the career development space, there was a really nice overlap with those two skill sets I found in my work in career development, developing a framework and methods and tools. But like most people in career development, I did not start here. So I actually had a 10-year career in engineering, and I worked solving all kinds of business and technical problems. I would build simulation models and optimization models for manufacturers all over Canada, the United States, and Europe. And I really got interested after some time in solving people problems more than business and technical problems. And I didn't really know what to do with this desire to make a shift. It was strange. I felt a bit confused, like many of our clients. I wish I had gone to a career professional. I don't think I knew that they existed, even, which is crazy. The problem sometimes needs to get worse before you can figure out what the problem is. And I remember one time working in a manufacturing company, and they actually made handguns. And as an engineer, my job was to make them more efficient and effective and get more product through the door. And I realized, okay, police forces were using guns, but a lot of people were using guns for other purposes. And I thought, here I am wanting to help people. And instead, in a way, I felt like I was harming people, by making this gun manufacturer more efficient. So I won't say that I quit my job that day, but it began a process. I went back to school. I did a master's in counseling psychology. I was the only engineer in the psychology department. But again, it was fun to bring these disciplines together. And I didn't really even know where that master's of counseling was going to go until I had a serendipitous meeting after I finished that degree that led me into career counseling at one of the big universities here in Toronto. And that began a whole change. So it was really now, from a career lens, I would call it a values tension, wanting to help people and yet hurting people. I didn't even have the language back then to say what the problem was. And I think a lot of clients are like that. They know that there's a problem, but they just don't know quite what to deal with it.
Indeed. Thank you for sharing. I feel like my journey is slightly similar to yours, but never thought about hurting people because I never thought that I was ever going to be a good engineer. So that's the main difference.
Mark, wonderful to see you again. I was thinking back when we met. I think it's been about 10 years this summer when we met at a National Career Development Conference. I think it was Chicago, wasn't it, in
I think
2016
it
or
was
thereabouts?
Chicago on an escalator with Rich Feller in the scene.
Yeah, I think Rich will talk about here in a few minutes. I think he told you, oh yeah, you got to meet Mike. And he told me, oh yeah, you got to meet Mark. And sure enough, we met on our own. It's a chance event in our own connection story. I love that you talked a little bit about your life roles at the beginning of your introduction. And I think all of us agree that careers are really a constellation of paid and unpaid roles. And so I appreciate you sharing different aspects of your own narrative. And thank you for sharing a little bit about your trajectory to the career development field. I think that's fascinating. And I also, it's surprising that sometimes we learn that people aren't even aware of the services that we provide, right? This is what we do for a living, and we're sort of, people
Exactly.
are oblivious to the fact that these services are out there for them. I was wondering if you could maybe pick up where you left off and talk about how you got into the career counseling field. It sounds like you were working for a university, but then eventually you decided to own your, or start and own your own business, which is Career Cycles. Talk more about that transition and what that's been like for you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to work with a team to provide these career services to people. And it's like we now have a career center that is our own free career center, Career Cycles, where as long as you can figure out how to generate revenue, you're free. I did work in two big universities in their student services, and I learned a ton, and I had great colleagues, and there was just so much to learn. And I appreciated that, but I also found there were some work contexts in these universities that there was some tension with me. Like, one was a unionized environment, and I just come from engineering, and it was a very merit-based world of work. You'd work hard, and coming into an environment that was unionized, and it was more like, how can we do less? How can we do just the minimum amount of work in this work context? And it just was, there was a kind of tension, and I always felt like, hey, I want to do my own thing. So, in fact, I only started 3 days a week. I was a 60% staff member. And I did that for a long time while I launched two things. Like, the name Career Cycles actually came literally, cycles of nature and cycles of life. It's a metaphor, but I'm actually a cyclist and I was leading trips. I eventually started to develop my own cycling trips that had a reflective component where we would take people on a kind of career reflection journey while we physically cycled around different parts of the world. I did it here in Canada, then I did it in Cuba, and then I did it in Nicaragua. And we did these trips, and the name Career Cycles actually came from that. And I had that, and then I had my own practice running on the side. And over some years, I went from 3 days a week, and I said, hey, this practice is going pretty well. Let me go to 2 days a week, and I'll make the rest of my work career cycles. And then I actually went to 1 day a week. And then 1 day a week is almost barely a thing. And it was like, it was easy then to say, you know what? I'm going to step away from the institution and I'm going to focus on this practice. And since then, we've worked with 5,000 plus people across Canada and the United States, mostly individual professionals. There are free services in Canada and the United States, and I'm sure other places where people are listening. There are state-sponsored employment services, but often it's group, often it's workshops. We're providing a more premium one-on-one service. And largely, it's professionals who are attracted to us. Crazy stories that we've heard of people making big changes and transitions. We worked with a member of Parliament of Canada who, after losing an election, what do you do now after you're a member of the Parliament? That's the government of Canada. And she had a, maybe I'll tell you that story in a bit, but we've worked with all these people, individuals in transition, organizations now also, doing group and individual work. And it's funny, the practice is called Career Cycles, and I've almost moved away from the word career. I actually don't like it as much because it is misinterpreted by so many people. And in fact, in North America and other countries, in Japan and other countries, as you have an aging population, you have a huge amount of people, 50, let's say age 50 plus, who are asking what's next. And I really like this phrase, what's next? You can ask that for a student graduating high school, graduating college or university, a mid-career professional, and then the 50 plus people, what's next? So I feel like we're working with people to help them answer what's next. If they like the word career, we'll use the word career, but we don't need to. And providing these tools and a framework for this story listening, and I'll tell you more about that, but our team, that's our calling card, and we only use this story listening approach. If people call us and say, what assessments do you use? And I know many listeners will be using MBTI or Strong Interest Inventory or any of these other tools. And we say, we do a narrative assessment. And I'll tell you more about that. But people seem to like it because people like telling their stories. And it still is a form of assessment, it's very structured. And we've now successfully served over 5,000 people.
That's great. Samantha, I was wondering, what do you think of that tagline, "What's next?"
I love the whole concept whereby I never thought that career cycles come from the part that you love cycling. You mentioned that in one of your life roles, yeah, a cyclist. And bring people on a cycling trip and get to know them about their journey, it sounds so fun. If I could have that, I would love to join you on the ride. But I'm also curious when you say career is a very misinterpreted word. I'm not so sure what you mean by that. Could you elaborate more?
We have this framework of job, career, and calling, and some people talk about that. And depending on what your socioeconomic perspective is, the word career might not be a word that you connect to. I need a job. I have to pay for my life or my rent. And so some people think jobs and not career. People 50 plus now start to they say what's next, but they don't use the word career. And if you say, hey, why don't you see a career coach? They'll say, I don't need a career coach because I don't have a career anymore. But hey, we can help you. Our career development superpowers can help people with the what's next question, but it's just framed that way. It's a bit different. So many high school students also don't relate to that yet. Like, I know we call ourselves career counselors or career management and career advisors, but yeah, hey, I'm a helping professional and I help you answer what's next using a narrative or story-based approach.
Very good. Thank you for answering the question that I was about to ask. If career coaches or career practitioner may not be the right title to introduce ourselves to different demographics, then what's next? And you say you are helping professions. I really like that. Thank you for that.
Mark, I wanted to also follow up around the storied approach to career. And I know this has been the focus of your work. Clearly, it's the mission and philosophy of career cycles and the work you do with your clients. And it seems narrative story approaches are part of this new family of approaches or frameworks that seem to be emerging, right? Sometimes you see the word postmodern or narrative is a common sort of tagline there. Say a little bit more about what might be driving these trends or influencing these interests around stories. It seems compelling, and it seems like you agree with me. Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. That's what I'm most excited about. So I really like that question. And I got to say, one of the seminal pieces that I read that helped me formulate the approach we use came, Mike, from you, because you did a kind of overview of narrative approaches and strengths and weaknesses. And I was delighted to read that early in the development of our narrative approach. When I read that, hey, narrative is great because it's more nuanced and it's based on people's lived experiences. When people enjoy telling stories and they're going to be more engaged, and there seem to be so many pros. And okay, what are the cons? It takes too long. It's too complicated, right? And many others. And so I really took that to heart. And as we started to develop this story listening approach, we tried to take the best of the pros, what is good about narrative, and try to address the problems. And I think we have successfully done that with this approach. I think the time is right. Listeners are from all over the world on this podcast. I am from one of the diverse cities on the planet. In Toronto, you have people from every country. I've been tracking the countries of origin of our clients. I'm over 85 countries of origin at this point. And so we're dealing with people who have so many different lived experiences. They come with diverse perspectives and trying to use a standardized assessment with them that might put them on some kind of normal curve of a trait or a characteristic when their cultural context might be quite different, doesn't really fit. And so I think there's a shift, and I feel like I was on the bleeding edge of this about 10 years ago, but I feel like the world has caught up. And it's a shift, especially in colleges and universities. You hear a lot of career advising, but I want to emphasize the shift from advising to story listening. So we're not like assessing and matching. Here's your list of interest. It matches you with funeral director or potato farmer, real stories that I've had clients talk about. But it's listening and reflecting and co-constructing meaning, because we know that there are no longer really linear career paths. They're narratives, they're stories, right? And so, how can we help people reflect on their experiences in an organized way to gather and organize what is relevant from their stories? So, we know something like a strong interest inventory collects interests, an MBTI or a True Colors collects personality, right? We might have Strengths Finder to focus on skills and strengths, or use science on aptitudes. But instead of asking people, what are your interests or what are your skills, let's ask them, what are their stories? Because they're engaged in stories, they like it, they feel better telling their stories. What we as practitioners need is an organized way to listen to the stories and organize what we hear into these eight elements, right? Skills and strengths, of course, being one, and desires or values being another that any career practitioner would recognize, but eight elements. And if you can then Aggregate the insights across stories so that each story gets told with some excitement by our clients. But then, if you can aggregate the skills and strengths and the values from story one and from story two, and that work, that summer job, or that volunteer experience, or that travel experience, then the patterns emerge and it becomes so easy to generate career ideas and evaluate them based on this kind of pattern recognition that comes from story listening. Clients like it because, hey, we're story animals, right? We've been telling stories around the fire for 1 million years. Stories were the beginning of our language, in fact, right? Some people say that stories came first and language followed. Language came because of stories and the need to tell stories. So why not engage that fundamental part of our episodic memory? It's why we like Netflix, right? Because we want stories, but organize those stories, right? And I think we've come up with a method that these eight elements, we have 26 letters in the English alphabet. We can make about 1 million English words out of that alphabet. With eight elements, eight career elements, if you listen carefully from clients, you can create lots of career paths, and it becomes so easy to generate those career paths. So I think we were at it, and then along comes the Wall Street Journal, that some people know, a reputable American newspaper. And in December 2025, they had a headline, "Companies are desperately seeking storytellers." And the article went on to say that businesses across the world, but in North America, had a job title. There's actually a job title. It's a combination of kind of like communications, external communications, HR, internal communications, sales, and the new job title is storyteller. And this is what businesses and companies want. And I was like, wow, look at that. The Wall Street Journal has now caught up to me. I was at it 10 years before, and they finally caught up to it. So I really think we're onto something, and that businesses and organizations and people and Netflix, it's all about stories. So I'm really excited to help people learn how to story listen and build those skills so that they can help their clients tell their stories.
Thanks, Mark. Samantha, what are your reactions to that? This idea of stories and finding meaning and clients co-creating and finding meaning through narrative. Does that resonate with some of your own work?
It does. I was just reflecting on my journey with different clients in the room itself. I don't really recall that I start off with very cold questions like, tell me about what you want to achieve in life and stuff like that. It always start off with wanting to understand about the person. And I think one thing that Mark mentioned was that it can be a long process. And to be honest, not all practitioners are trained in that. They are still starting to learn about it. And I know that from your work with Rich Fellow, you guys created games or tools to help that process. So we need to talk about it because I have no access to it in Singapore unless I think I ship it over. But that's another story for another day. So for One Life Tools and the game Who You Are Matters that you created with Rich Fellow, what have been some of the reaction? What was the motivation behind the game? Maybe can you share with us a little bit more?
Yeah, you want to engage people, right? Like, I think a lot of people, even in high school, I don't know if this is true around the world, but in North America, you have a lot of high school students who did a career test when they answer 100 questions and it says, okay, Samantha, you should be a potato farmer. Mike, you should be a funeral director. And people remember this matching system that worked maybe in the 1950s or 60s, when the world was stable and people were stable. But the world is unstable and people change rapidly. And we don't live in that world anymore of matching. And yet, the public has this kind of idea that career help is all about matching and taking a test. And Rich and I said, so this is Rich Feller. He's my co-founder of One Life Tools. He's based in the US in Fort Collins, Colorado. And I'm here in Toronto, Canada. So it's a international collaboration. And we've been working on engaging ways to sidestep some of the expectations that people have about what career development is. I think mostly people think career developers do one of two things. They match you with an assessment, or they fix your resume and help you with your job search. And they don't know that there's this other big thing that we do, a superpower, I think, of story listening, of spotting skills and strengths, generating ideas. And how can you do that in an engaging way. So we already knew that we had a method that worked, a narrative method. And in 2015, we actually published in a peer-reviewed journal an outcome study of this narrative method. And so we were building on that. That was one-on-one, right? And in this idea of having eight elements, right? So eight elements: desires or values, skills and strengths, personal qualities, interests. We have other people, which are influencers. And I was really interested to hear Candy Ho on an earlier episode of your podcast talk about influencers. So we have influencers or other people, assets, future possibilities, and thoughts and feelings. Those are the eight elements. And isn't there a way that you could engage a group of people to come together to share these, I call them micro narratives, have fun, enjoy themselves, engage, and still get at the result that you're looking for, which is like a holistic assessment, not just personality, but interests also, not just personality and interests, but strengths also, not just those three, but values also. How can you do that? And we struck up this idea of doing it in a game. And it's, you know, these things where you sometimes have a light bulb moment. Oh, a game. And like the whole idea actually came in one moment. It was like a light bulb moment. But I'll tell you that Rich and I have put blood, sweat, and tears into taking that one inspirational moment and turning it into something that works. And if any listener is thinking, hey, I should do a game or something, it's a great idea. And you just don't know how people are going to react to it. And we've now gone through, we're on version 8.4, just to give you a feel of it. And we realized, like, if you want to scale something up big time, as we've tried to do with this game, and we have thousands of these game kits around the world, including in Singapore, Samantha. We did some work with the National University of Singapore and others. And it's in, I think it's in 13 countries now, largely in Canada and the United States, but in 13 countries. And this gamified approach is engaging. Like, first and foremost, people tell micro narratives. There's a little talking stick I'll show you if listeners want to see this little magic listening wand. That's like a talking stick. I talk, you listen, you talk, we listen. And it's democratic because it's about 30 seconds. And each person has about 30 seconds to tell a story based on a series of cards. And this amazing little tool gets people talking. It's not overwhelming because the introverts might feel like, oh, I don't want to tell a story, but it's just 30 seconds. It's responding with very structured prompts. And you know when your turn is because it goes and it passes around a small group of four or five people. And people found it so engaging. We've done the game thousands of times. Rich and I have each facilitated it thousands of times. Sometimes we say it's like a 2-day retreat in 2 hours. You could do it in an hour or you could do it in 75 minutes, but a 2-day retreat in 2 hours, we do it for staff development. We more and more we're doing it in workplaces. And but it largely it's in colleges and universities, and people find it so engaging. I was teaching a credit-bearing career course at the University of Toronto. All the students would do the game experience and then other narrative reflections. And Mike, you and I even collaborated on a qualitative outcome study of those students to see what effect this game, it wasn't just the game, it was the whole course, but the game was an anchor component. And finding out, like, hey, can we look at a narrative approach that has these cool tools? Because there's a lot of stuff out there. We know really great, smart people who have published a lot, Mark Savickas, Pamelia Brott, who have used narrative approaches in their work. You often find it going from theory to practice. And what we really did was we went from practice to theory. So this is a practitioner's tool, something that came from practice that works from a kind of practitioner's eye view. But then we went to theory with it. We got outcome studies published. We published articles and book chapters to bring this into play. And so it's now a cornerstone of our narrative ecosystem that has the game, it has an online storyteller platform, it has a training system, it now even has an AI assistant to create deeper benefit after human reflection. So if there's more questions on AI, because I'm sure there are, we can go there, but that's part of our narrative ecosystem.
I really like that idea of micro narratives, Samantha. I think we both could probably use that with our students, right? This idea of creating mini stories as a way to capture the episodes of their lives that they can then share with other prospective clients or employers.
Exactly, because I think one of the challenges that some of the students now face is first, they are really good digitally, but when it comes to face-to-face communication and really sit down and have a human conversation, I think some of them struggle. And that pocket one that you just showed me, I think it's amazing. It doesn't scare, but it encourages, it empowers them to just start talking. And I think once you start the ball rolling, things will just flow naturally from there.
Mark, I
Totally.
also really like the idea of the talking stick. And my immediate thought was I could use a couple of those for our faculty meetings this semester. I think that would
Don't,
work really
no
well.
kidding. People have asked after I've shown this and used it, people want it for their meetings. I just recently did an
Yeah.
organizational Who You Are Matters. That's the game name, a Who You Are Matters event for an organization. And the woman who brought me in said, "Hey, can you bring me like a few of these things?" Because it equalizes things. This is one of the things that happens when group, one person speaks a lot and the other people want to speak, but they're a little quieter. So this draws out the quieter people. It slows down the talkative people and it levels the playing field. I've even had, these Who You Are Matters game events in college and university settings where the professor is sitting with the students, even first years, who might be intimidated. But then you realize, like afterwards, I walked up to one group who was playing with the professor, and when I asked some of the students, like how was it playing with Professor Reeve, and one of the students said, like he's actually just a person, and it was like the student was shocked that this professor was actually a person who had a life, who had a family, who talked in their micro narratives about things beyond just strictly career things, and it really created this kind of engagement across maximum diversity. And that's what I'm really excited about, is even diverse people who don't know another one another can quickly sink into that. Their small talk, they sink into big talk.
I like that. And I like the idea of moving from talk into action. And I'm sure that's a part of the overall plan. I want you to talk a little bit more about this idea of experiential learning that you try and instill in your clients and probably your students. It's this idea of crafting experiments, right? Or if you follow a design approach, encouraging prototyping. Can you say a little bit more about how you inspire your clients to then take the next step, maybe having engaged in the game or having engaged in a couple of sessions with you and your staff? Like, what might be next in terms of application, Mark?
Yeah, right on. There's this funny thing that humans suffer from. Maybe you guys have heard of it. It's this thing called procrastination. Anybody familiar with that term? Right? Like it is so easy to procrastinate with these kind of career development actions, exploratory actions, right? Because nobody makes you do it, nobody pays you to do it. So at the end of the Who You Are Matters game, in addition to all the reflections that you do, we get people to say, to explore this possibility, one small step I will take within the next week is, and they fill it in, right? A small step within the next week. So I think these small actions are, to use a Canadian metaphor, maybe this works for Minnesota, Mike, but maybe not in Singapore, but the idea of a snowball effect. You take a small amount of snow and you roll it and it gets bigger and bigger. And small actions are much better than waiting for the big stroke of genius. So small exploratory actions. So we're all for taking these small actions, but in the right direction, in a direction that seems suitable. I actually interviewed on Career Buzz. I interviewed the world's foremost expert on procrastination, right? So this is Professor Tim Pitchell. He's based at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. Look him up. He has the website procrastination.ca. Super good researcher. He's got 100 articles to his name. And I said, "Tim, what's the secret? How do you get over procrastination?" And I'm waiting for some brilliant thing that he's going to share with me. And he said, after all my research and talking to a million people about this, it comes down to simply asking people, what is the next action? Like, it is so simple. Anybody listening is, aha. But what is the next action? I've really come to trust that question. Like, after all the reflection, we don't just act for the sake of acting. And I think there's some things that the happenstance approach gets wrong in that. Hey, just try something. I think there can be very smartly directed action, but those small actions have a snowball effect and people don't realize it, and that one thing leads to another. I think a lot of our work and a lot of the story listening that I mentioned before, reflecting on experience, turning it into a clarification statement, having a good output of that reflection, coming up with an exploration plan, but turning that exploration plan into very small steps in the very near future and getting people. I use this phrase, inspired action, take inspired action. And all is the client wants to do it and agrees to do it. That may not sound grand, but I think in the first year or two of doing career counseling, I made every mistake you can possibly make, including creating all kinds of action plans for clients. And then they would come back and you'd check in on the action plan. And you would find out they did zero or one thing out of the 10 brilliant things that you said that they should do. And after a while, like I learned, no, what is the small step client that you want to do that you'll actually do? And I can help you generate some of those ideas if you're not sure. And we could do coffee chats, or I call that field research, or all kinds of things. But if you don't want to do it, and if you don't agree to do it by a certain time, then let's not mess about and let's not put it on the list and get them to argue for what they will do. And I find that these small actions that people agreed to do, even then, not everybody does everything they said, but at least they sat there and they agreed with you. Yes, that's a good thing to do. And I want to do that. And I've got a date to do it. And I'm going to hopefully feel good about it. And I'll see you next week, client, and we'll see how it went.
I like that. I like that. It's not just thinking about that big leap, but it's also the small action. And most importantly, it's also action in the right direction. Because sometimes you will have interesting clients who come up to you that, oh, my Netflix section is something that is completely non-relevant to what we have discussed in the session. I like that. Inspired, take an inspired action. So you talk about this part about following up, and I think you briefly talk about this AI thing earlier on when you were sharing about that game. So it actually brings me to this question, right? In the age of AI and all the disruption, how can one navigate in order to stay competitive from a narrative perspective, especially for career practitioners?
Reflect first. Like, reflect, human-powered reflection, supported reflection first. There is a place for AI in career development, I believe. And from all the people I'm speaking to, both clients and practitioners, because I've been training through One Life Tools, we do a lot of training. And so I've trained well over 2,000 career practitioners and other helping professionals. And from what I'm hearing and from our own community of practice, most people are doing something with AI. And clients are too. I'm sure if you, Samantha and Mike, are working with students, you're seeing it, you're hearing it, from help with their resume and their cover letter to interview prompts. But also, what should I do next with my life? And if you feed AI, or let's just say a large language model like ChatGPT or Claude or any of these others. So let's say we're talking, I think, largely about LLMs. And if you feed that your resume, when you say, what should I do with my life? A resume looks backwards and it says where you've been. But especially for those who are navigating change and transition, the resume doesn't catch what is the present and future focus, right? That's where our clarification statement and our story listening comes in. So I think reflect first before using AI. AI is a useful tool. In our language, we've called it the online storyteller AI assistant. So I'm using the word assistant very mindfully. I think it's even more than an assistant. Maybe it's a kind of creative assistant, but What an assistant is the sidekick, which it sits beside us, and that we, the practitioners, are taking the lead, or we, the practitioners, are showing our clients how they can make use of AI. So first reflect, and I think that this human-powered deep listening, the things that we do that are not just transactional, but beyond transactional with our clients, is crucial. So reflect first. What did we notice? After you reflect and you story listen and you find the patterns and you create the clarification statement, if you feed that clarification statement into an LLM, it does really good things. So I've been very impressed, right? And this is where our AI assistant comes in, is what are the 15 prompts that can take the output of your human-powered reflection and go beyond the list of possibilities that you've created? So for example, we have these UN sustainability development goals, and a lot of people want to do good things, right? They want to solve problems, do good things in this broken world. So you could say, hey, LLM, based on the client data, right? And we anonymize it to make sure that it's got privacy baked in. And we built one of these custom GPTs in ChatGPT. Take this client data and now pick of the SDGs, which three SDGs are most aligned with this client's clarification statement, and what are some job titles or career sectors that they could consider? So that's interesting. And it starts to help people connect the dots. Like a little sidebar here, I've been using the phrase career stewardship a lot these days. And for me, it's this kind of tension that many people have between doing well and doing good, doing well in an expensive world that we live in, and doing good to fix the broken world that we find ourselves in. And the tension there between doing well and doing good. And it's not either or. I think it's a both and perspective. So it's both doing well and doing good. So you can then say to LLMs, I want to do good, but I also want to do well. So what are some practical ways that I could solve some of the world's problems via the SDGs, Sustainability Development Goals, is one thing. The other thing, and this may sound weird, but I'm going to say this thing, some people I think will relate to what I'm about to say, but knowing what to want, right? What do you want in your career and life? And it actually turns out that many people don't get that right because when they want something and they get it, they don't like what they wanted. And you could spend years aiming for a career. And I give my own personal example in this. In my engineering career, I really wanted to be a management consultant and work in one of these top firms, right? There's a bunch of top firms in North America. And I said, hey, I should do that. And I worked hard at that. I wanted it. And I pushed to want it, to get there. I went through an extensive interview process. I finally started to work for one of these top firms. And pretty quickly, I realized I did not like it. And so there's a technical term for this called miswanting, right? It's Dan Gilbert and Tim Wilson, and they came up with this term in 2000. And there's a great article that your listeners could check out. And I think it is so relevant in career management, right? That people need help knowing what to want, right? I realized I didn't like what I thought I wanted, which was management consulting. And I made one of the errors that Gilbert and Wilson say is that you want something because you look at one part of it, but you conveniently ignore all the other parts of it. So I wanted the prestige, I wanted the money, but I didn't realize that you had very little control over the clients that you were working with and the kinds of projects you were doing. And I did not like that. That goes back to an earlier story that I mentioned. And now I think helping people know what to want is a really complicated business because you can't tell your client, like, no, you shouldn't want that. Mom and dad are there to tell them that, right? We're not there to tell them that. But if you put the client's data from their clarification statement, from their narrative reflection, and then you prompt the AI and say, what might this client want that they actually will like? Okay, what might this client want that they will actually like as opposed to miswant and they won't like it? And that is very effective. Right? That is a really insightful thing that people get from AI. So that's two examples of prompts.
Thanks, Mark. I really like that idea of using AI but reflecting first. I think sometimes, even with younger clients, I see this in my classroom. Students are immediately going to chat, right? Or they're going to their large language model preference, and they're not doing some of that early work, some of that brainstorming. And I see it in some of the writing assignments, and I want to say, ooh, don't discount your own creativity at the beginning. So I think your approach of reflecting first and then using AI or other tech tools later to fill in the gaps of the good work that they already done, I think that's a better approach. Samantha, do you have any reactions to that piece?
I completely agree with you. I think a couple of students came to me and say, how can I train my critical thinking skills? And my first reaction was, stop using your LLMs. Think first before you ask them to critique your work. So yeah, I'm with you on this.
Mark and Samantha, we're moving towards the final stretch of our episode today. And Mark, we have a couple of concluding questions for you. Using this idea of what's next, you started with that at the beginning of our discussion and how you preferred that term or that slogan more so than career. And I might steal that from you, just so you know. I'm just getting consent right now. But I'm thinking about this question. What might be next for you? What's up? What's on your sort of agenda? What's capturing your attention right now as you move forward with your own work?
Yeah, like there's a few directions that I'm going now, and in part circumstances have created that, and in part other opportunities. But this story listening, I feel really strongly about it, and I feel the deep listening that is required and for people to feel heard is so important in this world that we're living in right now. So beyond the traditional trainees, like the career practitioners and advisors and coaches who might be listening, great, we really like that group of people. But I think moving beyond that, you know how in any little group of people, there's always that go-to person when somebody has a personal problem or needs some advice. I'm calling them the trusted listeners. There's always a trusted listener, somebody that who's just that person. And I think this story listening movement can expand beyond the career development circle that it started in and go to a much larger group of people, the trusted listener group, and give them some tools and trainings to do the deep listening and help them be a better listener, help them be a better coach, mentor, advisor to their friends and family. Because research shows that most people, when they have a career ache, they don't use the thing. If you have a toothache, you go to a dentist. If you have a career ache, you should go to a career professional, right? But research shows that people generally go to friends, family, and coworkers first before us. So, you know, why not empower some of them? It's harder to change everybody's mind and say, hey, come to a career professional. Like, I think all of our listeners here agree that we should be accessed more. But I'm excited about helping these trusted listeners and build a movement of story listeners. Can we build humanity's capacity to listen to stories at scale better, to understand each other's humanity, right? And maybe we'll be able to bridge some of the polarities that we see fracturing society right now. So we've begun, we've got about 2,000 trained people. Can we expand that? That's exciting for me. So that's one thing. And, you know, this AI and its impact on not just us as career practitioners and listeners and helping professionals, but it's obviously infiltrating every corner of the economy. And I've started to facilitate with a large group of people an AI stewardship practice program, AI stewardship practice program. And there's many cohorts actually going on right now, and I'm facilitating a group of career practitioners, leadership, workforce development. And the idea is like, how are you using AI, a chance to reflect and mobilize on your own use of AI so that you can think about it in a more responsible manner in your own work, personally and professionally? So I think a chance to pause and reflect and give people a chance to think about their own strategies compared to what they think they might be doing or what they think should be doing. Because AI, I think, is really going to make a lot of changes in career practice and in the workforce in the very near future. And very few of us are thinking about this in any coherent way to prepare ourselves for what's going to come. So those are two exciting things. Post-secondary in Canada and the United States is suffering for two different reasons. In Canada, we had so many international students, and the government in Canada turned the volume way down. And so, as there were so many people coming from all corners of the world, but India, China, Philippines, like were three of the big countries. And it's been cut back so much, and a lot of institutions, because they lost government funding, were relying on international student fees. And now everybody's budget is cut or frozen in Canada. And in the US, it seems that there's this tension between higher education and the government. And so also the uncertainty has created budget freezes and budget cuts. So it's made us pivot from our traditional market in post-secondary and higher ed to workplaces. So we're looking at using some of these story listening tools as a means for organizational career development. If I'm an employee of a university, a staff member, or an employee of any company, how do I grow and develop and build my career? So that's a third area that I'm interested in. So story listening, AI stewardship practice program, and organizational career development moving forward.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. And I appreciate how you mentioned the shifting demographic and trends, especially across post-secondary institutions. And you mentioned changes in Canada, you mentioned the United States, and we're certainly seeing significant drops in enrollment of our international students, both at the undergrad and at the graduate level. And I'm wondering, Samantha, in Singapore, in your area of the world, are you seeing some of those same shifts or observations?
In Singapore, if you are talking about higher ed, we are also seeing a lot of international students. So they face a different challenge. One could be understanding the culture and then getting into the workforce. That could be one. The other one could be just geopolitical tension, which is a story for another day. Yeah, but yes, we are seeing that shift as well. And as a super aged society, Singapore is considered a super aged society. By 2030, one in every adult will be aged above 60. So that's how fast we are aging. So we are also definitely seeing the use of AI, robotics to help simulate the economy.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's some global shifts that are common across the globe. And you mentioned, Mark, a little bit about this sort of builds on the previous question of some of the societal ills that we're all struggling with. What brings you hope within this work that you're doing? You've mentioned the three projects, but is there something else that you're hoping to see from clients or your own students?
Kids bring me hope, like kids. I don't know if this is the answer to that question, Mike. Sometimes I actually feel quite worried about what's going on. And with just the geopolitical problems and the coming AI waves that are coming, I've acquired a mentee in each of the first 3 decades of life. So I have a little cousin of mine who I hang out with once a week. She's 6 years old. And it's like really helpful to remember how to laugh and have fun and be silly. And that brings me hope that she's still at that age. I've been a big brother through Big Brothers Big Sisters. It's a big charitable organization in North America. I don't know if it's in Asia. And I've been a big brother for many years. So my little brother, who's now bigger than me because he's now 19 and he's like taller and bigger than me. And so I've been mentoring him for many years. He's just finished high school and thinking about what's next. And through the engineering school that I went to, there's a mentorship program. And I've been mentoring an engineering student in her 20s, thinking about what's next. She's got one final year of engineering school. So younger people give me hope, and spending some time and energy. This is something, it's a pay it forward way. And I just want to do it. And I feel like it's going to fix the world. And I volunteered a lot and I've been on boards of things and it's all abstract. And I like that. And you can shape policy. But something about the direct helping of these three individuals it touches me really personally, and it feels like it's a small way to put a seed of hope into a really crazy world.
Thank you, Mark, for sharing how you're impacting future generations. I like that one from each decade. Samantha, we're moving into our final questions. Do you want to take the next one?
Sure. In fact, the next one is not exactly from me. It was from our previous speaker, Dr. Candy Ho. So she has a question for you. Her question is, she has this CDB movement. So she wants to know, how are you cross-pollinating and playing outside of career development world to make a difference?
Yeah. So first of all, Candy Ho, if you're listening, thank you for that question because I heard you on the podcast and say that question. I'm not sure if you knew it was me who was coming. I know Candy from, we're colleagues and I know her. So thank you for the question. And it was just fun to listen to that. And the B, I got to say, I have that pin. There's a pin. And I looked for it because I knew you were going to ask me this question and I could not find my pin. So, Candy, if you're listening, I need another pin. Okay. There's a
She
little
has
pin
plenty
with a
of them.
B,
Yeah, she created them and she has plenty of them, so you can hit her up for sure.
Okay, good. Cross-pollinating, I told you about this influence of younger people. And with the 19-year-old and the 23-year-old, we are having some career conversations. But I'm going to come back to much earlier in our interview today. I started my career in engineering, and it's so interesting. Like people say, wow, like, how did you leave engineering and get into career development? And I feel that I didn't ever leave. But now more than ever, I feel more connected to it because guess what? We're doing as a career cycles, our practice is doing a lot of work with engineers, and we have a contract right now with the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers in the province here, working with internationally educated engineers from every corner of the globe. And when I say, like, I had somebody new from Togo and Haiti and Peru last week, and that was like, I think, my 86th, 7th, and 8th country of origin, because people are coming here from everywhere. And I'm using this story listening with them in a unique way to get licensed. And licensing is a big thing in Canada to be licensed as an engineer. And you have to tell the regulator 34 little stories of applying your engineering knowledge in the real world. And engineers are great at calculations and problem solving, bless their hearts. But storytelling isn't on the top of their skill set. I'm, in a way, teaching story listening and storytelling to people who don't naturally come by it, but who desperately want to get better at it because they need to pass this hurdle of licensing, and they won't if they don't tell these stories. So it's been really fascinating to use these story techniques that Rich and I have developed at One Life Tools and that our team uses at Career Cycles. And now talking to these people from all over the planet and getting them to learn how to story tell and story listen has been a real interesting, I don't know, cross-pollination, bringing a few different themes together all under one roof.
Thank you. I really like that. I like how engineering was your starting anchor, and from there, how you branch out to reach so many different individuals. And somewhat, I also agree with you that for engineering profession, storytelling and story listening may not be our top skills indeed. All right,
But Samantha, you're obviously breaking the mold, as I hope I am, by showing people, hey, we can be quite versatile and steer clear of all of these assumptions about engineers and their skills and their habits.
indeed. So before we come to the end of today's episode, we would also like to invite you to ask a question to our next speaker. What
So
would
I thought about that, and I heard you in a previous episode talking a little bit about the happenstance approach and career serendipity. And so I'm going to challenge your next podcast guest to share a story, because it's narrative, right? Share a story of how an unplanned event positively influenced their career or life. And, can I just add a little caveat to the question? So, it's a story. And the reason to tell a story is to normalize happenstance. And we read that in the Planned Happenstance article from 99 with Mitchell Levin and Crumbolds. And by the way, I interviewed John Krumholz on Career Buzz on my podcast. He's passed since, but it was a number of years ago, and I had him on a guest as a guest. And he told me you have to use the happenstance approach because Mitchell ended up with the planned happenstance term. To use the happenstance approach, you need to normalize these stories. But when I ask for these stories on Career Buzz, often I hear people say, "Oh, and this lucky thing happened." Or this fluke happened. We have these words in English that describe all these things. And I'm going to challenge Samantha, you and Mike, if the word luck or it just happened comes up, to challenge them to say, what was the actual small action that you did that made that good unplanned event occur? Because it's not helpful for listeners to hear, oh, somebody got lucky, but I'm not lucky, so I won't. You have to get people to say the small things that they did to make that good career serendipity moment happen. And then that becomes super helpful for your listeners. So, what's one story of how unplanned events positively influenced your career and life? And I will be listening.
All right, I think we have come to the end of our episode today. So I'm very thankful for Mark for taking your precious time to share all these insightful tips, strategies, and some of the interesting things that you are embarking on. Wow, that is a very interesting episode. Michael, how was it for you?
I found it to be really engaging, Samantha. I think this is our second episode, and I think so far we're two for two in terms of outstanding guests. So I learned so much from Mark Franklin, and he just reminded me of the great work that he's doing around stories and narrative and this idea of building micro narratives. And I'm wondering what your reactions were to this idea of story, or this, he called it story listening. What were your reactions?
I think that is something that I have been practicing every now and then in my own in my own engagement with my clients. I just never had this technical term to it that I was practicing story listening and storytelling. But I really like how I'm learning this new term from him because telling a story seems to be a little bit less daunting when we encourage our clients to be more engaged, when we get our students to talk. So I think I'm going to start using this term. How about yourself?
Yeah, the same. I really like this idea of micro narratives. I think sometimes students can get overwhelmed when they might hear, you're the author of your own life, you're writing your own story. It can seem like a grand plan, but I like this idea of a micro narrative, which also aligns with Mark's message of inspired action, right? See, there's small actions that one can take, perhaps after doing some reflection and really putting this next step or next action into a next future pathway, ideally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that I took away was this concept of career. He talked about career cycles where he is leading the company and came from because he loves cycling and cycling has a journey, right? And he actually shared
Yeah.
that career is a highly misinterpreted word depending on who is listening to it at what phase of their life. So instead of saying, what is your career plan? I learned a new term called what's next? What's next for
Yeah.
you?
What's next? Yeah. In fact, he even said he likes that better than the term career.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe he'll
So,
change the title of his business at some point. I doubt it. I like career cycles. And I also like the idea of cycling because he was a cyclist. But also, I think he mentioned that there's a lot of cycles in terms of a metaphor of the seasons of our lives, right? Which resonates with what Candy had mentioned in our first episode of the season around constellation of life roles. So I like that as well. You asked a really thoughtful question about AI and the impact of AI on his work. And he talked a little bit about what he recommends to his clients around reflecting first. Any more thoughts on that for you in terms of how you might use that with your own clients?
I think so. I think first is to stay away from LLMs at the start of your brainstorming. I think
Yeah.
it's important to still tap into our human creativity. So that's still something that I am practicing with my clients as well. Even on myself, if I want to problem solve something, I don't go to any LLMs to start. I will draft something up before I go to them. And for your work, I believe you mentioned something about students writing their articles or their essays, and you can tell, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And sometimes if I assign an essay or a project in class, students will ask, "Can I just use chat to brainstorm some ideas?" And the hair on the back of my neck just stands up because I want to say, "No, that should come from you. That's part of the writing process." And I think anytime you engage AI to try and do some of that work, you're outsourcing some of your own creativity, your own abilities to a machine. And I just think that's it discounts the natural abilities and skills that our young students have. And it concerns me. And I think that was one of Mark's points as well.
I agree with what Jeff said. And last but not least, I think one thing that I really would like to see if I can get my hands on is something that looks like this, but it's a talking wand, they
Oh
call
yeah,
it.
the talking stick, he called it.
Stick, talking stick, yeah.
Yeah, we could probably use one of those. We should probably buy a box of those, Samantha, from him. Maybe we can get a discount because you could use them. I said in faculty meetings, you could probably use them with your clients. I was thinking I could probably use them in my own household with two teenagers. I think a talking stick could come in handy.
Yeah, I
So,
think so. I like that 30 seconds airtime, and I think that is just right for a short. Yeah, that's
yeah,
cool.
exactly. I had one final thought, and then I want to hear from you in closing. But I like Mark's idea about career stewardship and this tension between doing well and doing good. It's both. And I think a lot of students, especially younger students, are looking for that. When I talk to some of my students, I think there's a similar concept, is students want high income. They want decent, they want to make a good living and they want nice things in life, but they also want high impact. So, like, how do you balance the two where you can earn a decent living but also make an impact? And I think that's what Mark was getting at with this idea of doing good and serving others. Do you have any
Yes,
thoughts on that piece?
I think it's possible for us to do well and do good at the same time. I think what is most important is how do we define it ourselves, right? What is
Yeah.
well to us and what is good to us? And he also brought up the concept of miss wanting.
Yes.
So I thought that was very insightful, and I can't wait for our listener to hop onto the episode and get the full learning themselves.